Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Edward J. Larson is with us. I was really surprised as I read through the history of the idea that is held in the word evolution at how often, regularly, importantly, you brought society into this, that this idea isn't in and of itself. It's always embedded in the larger stories that we tell ourselves. Call it culture, call it what you will. But always, whether you're talking about Cuvier, the French guy in the 1800s who says, absolutely, no way, and sets the standard coming out of the French tradition, that it's unchanging and we're not going to mess with it. And he's coming out of a time that has the French Revolution all around him. And all the way through this 200 years of thinking and back to the Greeks, you make so clear that the time in which these people are is critical.
I don't think that observation is limited just to evolution. I think science is part of society, and society influences science, the world we live in, the society, the culture, the broader art, the broader architecture, the literature influences, and it doesn't matter whether it's Einstein in physics or Heisenberg, that culture influences science, it helps shape science, and then in turn, science, which is part of intellectual history, then reinforces and influences society. And we see this, I'm sensitive to that, I believe, on every issue. I think it's generally true of intellectual thought generally. It doesn't matter whether it's literature or science. Now, science does have a reality as a sort of fall back on, but the reality is always perceived through humans. And therefore, even if there is that real nature out there, we only know it through our own minds and our own eyes. And our eyes and minds are shaped by the society. So you get somebody, you mentioned Cuvier, it's so clear with Lamarck, it's so clear with Darwin, it's clear with Ed Wilson today and Thomas Hunt Morgan. With Darwin, he was a product of a capitalistic society. He was an eager capitalist himself. His parents made money on capitalism. His grandfather, I mean, the Wedgwoods, made money through the China business. He was part of the rising Whig tradition that embraced competition, change, advance through progress. It wasn't a stagnant society in Britain anymore. It was the new rising capitalist middle class, upper class that was replacing the aristocracy. And his view of evolution so neatly fit what he was experiencing. And then when he played it back, it then reinforced those trends in society, and people like the business leaders in America, like Carnegie and Rockefeller, the political leaders in England, embraced this evolutionary idea, and they saw science further justifying the social developments of Western capitalism, Western liberalism, that classic 19th century liberalism. They saw these as reinforcing, and so that helped reinforce both their cultural views, but helped make the idea accepted scientifically. So that's that back and forth. And I try, since that's my view of what's happening in science, and I don't want to write this as a narrow study, I try to follow those through at every stage, not just with Darwin and Wallace and Lyell, but also through to the 20th century as well.
What you're talking about is, I think, social Darwinism, and it's bastard child eugenics, which I'd like to come back to that. But it part of this too, it would seem, in the context, goes to the Enlightenment. That without that Enlightenment project, both in England and the continental version, which were different, that those early steps into what was essentially experiments on the world around, trying to understand how things worked, that Darwinism would not have been possible, that Erasmus Darwin would not have been
his
grandfather would not have been raising these ideas.
The Enlightenment certainly brought to Western society a sense of progress and that change was good. And evolution presupposes the idea of change, and that change is good, and change is leading somewhere. Most evolutionists believe in progress, and that progress comes through the evolution. Now, you can read Darwinism a different way if you want, but that's not how Darwin read it. And you mentioned social Darwinism and eugenics, and those are some of the Well, eugenics, certainly the dark side. Social Darwinism, you can read, positive or negative. That's tied with Herbert Spencer, which was a great, very influential philosopher of his age. But people read Darwinism other ways. People saw progress. Karl Marx hailed Darwinism and wrote him a note with his book, in his inscripted note in Das Kapital, saying to Charles Darwin, the person who's sort of behind all my ideas. You get some
and Charles Darwin didn't accept this.
Well, Charles Darwin never even cut the pages. It's still in his library with the pages not cut, because he was a good capitalist and he was not interested in that. But then you get people like Wallace, who was a very spiritual person, a pacifist socialist.
Alfred Russel Wallace, who co-discovered evolution, the process for which we give Darwin the credit, and we forget about Wallace, but that is of whom you speak.
And he was co-equal, really, at the time. It was called the Wallace-Darwin theory for years, and in the British mind in the late 1800s, he was viewed as much tied to evolution as Darwin, and yet he took it. He was very much a pacifist, very much a women's rights advocate, very much very opposed to social Darwinism, yet he believed in progress, and it came out of his evolutionary ideas. And that follows through to the 20th century. You get some of the most progressive, liberal, democratic ideas coming out of avowed evolutionists. You also get Nazism and some of the most benighted, narrow-minded, elitist ideas coming out of Darwinism. It's, in that way, it's like any other rich philosophical idea. You bring with it ideas to it, and it interacts with those, and it can come out in a variety of different ways, play out in society.
I was surprised to be reminded by you that it was only in 1830 that even the word scientist got coined, that this was a person who looked at the natural processes without looking for supernatural answers. And scientist, that's just a word. It's always been there. No, it hasn't. Even the words change over time, and the scientist part seems a very important distinction that gets made, and then you start having branching distinctions that look a lot like how Darwin describes evolution. This scientist business.
Certainly, that's an important issue that comes out through a study of history of evolution, but you can see it in the study of any science through that period. You go before 1800, and when you'd use the term science, you meant knowledge. You didn't mean naturalistic knowledge. You were doing science. It was the science of any subject. It was the knowledge of that subject. And what began to happen in the early 1800s, that science began to be differentiated following the Enlightenment, that a particular higher level, the people who were advocating the use of the term, that a certain higher level of knowledge can come out through a particular method of doing science that's purely naturalistic. Observation, testability, repeatability. And so science broke off from its historic meaning and was evolved to be used to a certain means of look of naturalistic, not looking at revealed word, not looking at those things, that science looked at something other. At that time, it didn't mean that it was lower or higher than a religious knowledge. It was just a different sort of knowledge. Before that, science, again, would mean any sort of knowledge, whether it was revealed or out of nature. And then after that special use of the term science worked into the vocabulary, somebody then added the "ist" to it, made it scientist. And that became someone who, and this was also adopted to it wasn't viewed as exclusive in the sense that even very devoutly religious people would use that term when they were looking for naturalistic explanations. So you get people like Buckland and in America, Asa Gray, who were very devoutly religious. But when they were doing their science, they were also great scientists. When they were doing their science, they only looked for naturalistic explanations. That's all that scientists did. Now, they separately believed in God and looked for religious answers, but in doing that, they weren't doing science, they were doing something else. And so that differentiation really works its way out in the early 1800s and takes hold by the middle of the 1800s.
There's an interesting piece to me about the process by which this started permeating evolution, Darwinism, started permeating the culture. We talk about the velocity of change a great deal now and how everything moves with extraordinary rapidity. And yet, with the publication of the Origin, in England at least, and to a lesser extent in Western Europe and the United States, in a very short period of time, this huge idea had permeated large sections of those cultures in a way that I don't think would be possible now.
We can decide whether or not it would be possible now when we come back in just a moment. If you would, please, let's take a break. This is Edward J. Larson with us. The subject is evolution and many subjects around us. Please be with us when we return in a moment.